is the Victorian Country Hour with Warwick Long on ABC Radio Victoria.
A cyber attack has shut down Australia's biggest meat processor. Many JBS abattoirs are at a standstill today after the attack, and it's unknown how long it will take to fix it. It's affecting farmers too.
And then I had the phone call to say, oh, actually, we've got a bit of a problem. So the lambs are still in the feedlot.
More on that coming soon. And with no backpackers, what's becoming of the hostels?
It's obviously forced their hand to sell.
Are you expecting other local backpacker hostels could be sold in the future? Are you getting any inquiries from others?
Yeah, look, I have. I've had another couple indicate that they'd probably look to sell. And I think that's a pretty scary situation for Sunraysia.
We'll take you to that region on the program today. We also have the Victorian Government's press conference on coronavirus coming to you at around 12:30 as the emergency services broadcaster. Will bring that to you today on the program as well. And, you know, if you were looking for the extended version, you can always find that on the regional Facebook pages as well. Let's start today with some other news, though. Today is the day all dairy farmers should know their milk price for the next season. The milking year runs over the financial year, so that means on July 1, dairy farmers will all be on a new milk price. And under the recently developed dairy code, milk processors now have to publish their minimum price for the next season by 2 p.m. on June the 1st. And being June the 1st today, today is D-Day for milk prices. I'd love your help. If you're a dairy farmer and you get a milk price today, or if you've received your price, send us either a pic if you want of the details, or you can call us 1300 977 222 to call 1300 977 222, text 0467 842 722. You might also get a giggle knowing that today from the UN it is World Milk Day. So plenty to talk in dairy today. That's neither here nor there for the milk prices, though. We'll get a flurry of milk prices. Hopefully, we'll get them over the next hour or so. If you have any details, send them our way. 1300 977 222 to call. Text 0467 842 722, or hit me up on social media. Just search Warwick Long. That's how you can find me. This is what we know so far. Buller have announced their milk price first and had already revised it up over the last month or so. They have a minimum now of $6.50 a kilogram of milk solids. Their range is $6.50 to $7. Reminder to those who aren't really in the dairy industry, farmers are paid on their solids, the protein and butter fat in their milk. But if you want a rough guide, $6.50 to $6.70 is around 49 to 55, 53 cents per litre, roughly, to the farmer. Burra Foods have announced a range of $6.40 to $6.80. Fonterra have announced an opening milk price, and they have weighted average milk prices. Their opening is $6.55 a kilogram for milk solids. We think we've heard from UDC Midfield Group. Their opening price is $6.60 a kilogram of milk solids. We haven't got many other details from many other companies. So companies like Saputo, Bega, ACM, and whatever else is out there. If you have details you could share with us, we'd love to hear from you today. 1300 977 222 to call. Text 0467 842 722. We'll talk more on that as the day goes on, but if you can provide some details, we'd love to hear from you. Let's go to the meat industry now, though, on the Country Hour. Cyber attacks on a major meat processor has caused confusion for the local cattle industry. The ABC was told by a source in the local transport industry that numerous cattle consignments to JBS Meatworks had been cancelled and trucks have had to be turned around. That's because of cyber attacks that have shut down JBS Foods facilities in Australia, the US and Canada. Yesterday's national kill was cancelled and thousands of workers sent home. And this may have a big flow-on effect for cattle markets during the week. We'll get to that in a moment. But Matt Zorno from the Meatworkers Union told Callie Buchanan there's not a lot of information about what has happened yet, and his members are worried.
It's a little bit scant as far as detail goes, but obviously my members are fairly anxious and really are worried about their jobs.
Are you working with JBS on this?
I've spoken to JBS several times, but obviously it's an emerging situation and really things are changing quite quickly. JBS is doing what they can to get on top of it.
And is there a question mark over what it means for the future for your workers?
No, I think it'll be resolved sooner than later, but obviously my members are anxious as to their job security in the future. If these things are going to be quite common, losing work is obviously a problem for them.
And I imagine too that's on top of a pretty challenging time for processing at the moment.
Oh, most definitely. It's been, a little bit of a perfect storm over the last 2 years, and my members are doing it tough. No two ways about that.
Matt, what will you be doing as more details about this hack emerge?
Yeah, obviously I'll keep in close contact with JBS. We're going through our Facebook page informing members as to what's going on when I'm informed. I think in any of these situations you can appreciate the enormity of it. And obviously getting the right information is important for my members.
There's the Meatworkers Union there. The Global Office of JBS has acknowledged the attack, releasing this statement today, and I'll quote, "On Sunday, May 30, JBS USA determined that it was the target of an organised cybersecurity attack affecting some of the servers supporting its North American and Australian IT systems. The company took immediate action, suspending all affected systems, notifying authorities and activating the company's global network of IT professionals and third-party experts to resolve the situation. The company's backup servers were not affected, and it's actively working with an incident response firm to restore its systems as soon as possible. The company is not aware of any evidence at this time that any customer, supplier, or employee data has been compromised or misused as a result of the situation. Resolution of the incident will take time, which may delay certain transactions with customers and suppliers." End quote. That's from JBS's head office there. Sale yards are keeping an eye on this problem, though, because until the system is resolved, the issue is resolved, it looks like JBS, which is a major buyer at most Eastern Australian sale yards, will not be buying. Duncan McLeod is president of the Roma Livestock Agents Association, and he says the absence of JBS will have little effect on the sale at Australia's biggest cattle sale today in Roma.
We always like to have a full panel of buyers operating on a sale day, but sometimes circumstances don't allow that, so we've just got to go along with what's going on and be done with it.
Being such a big buyer in the Queensland cattle market, do you think that their absence this week could have implications for the price of cattle at sale yards around Queensland this week?
Well, John, the competition overall at Roma has been pretty strong, and I would imagine that there'd also be other buyers who... We had buyers here from as far south as Warrnambool in Victoria last week competing in the cow market. I would imagine that maybe some of those buyers might see it as an opportunity to go a bit harder to secure a bit more, a few more extra cattle. So hopefully it won't have a negative effect. It'll be fairly constant and things will just keep chugging along.
Now, heard from industry that there have been numerous cancellations of consignments of cattle bound for Meatworks and Beef City. What do you think could happen with those cattle that have had been cancelled this week by JBS? Where do they end up?
Well, I don't think they'll end up here. John, I believe that most of those cattle will probably just, if they're going to Beef City or they're going to other, they would just be reorganising kills and getting ready to put those cattle into another opportune moment when they can get them done. So I don't think that will directly make a major difference to what's happening along the way. If it was to be extended, yes, it could be a long thing, but it just depends on how people are situated. Everybody's got their own ideas of what they should or should not do, and I would imagine that will also come into effect what feed people have got, etc.
That is Duncan McLeod from the Roma Livestock Agents Association. It comes back to Farmgate too, and probably more starkly back to the farm gate, with many Australian producers supplying JBS directly and not being able to deliver on the date that they'd pre-organised with the company. Gabrielle Copeland from Logie Bray near Finlay in southern New South Wales is one of those. She delivers sheep to the JBS plant at Brooklyn, just outside of Melbourne. She told David Claughton one of her deliveries was cancelled yesterday and the shutdown is causing huge disruption to the supply chain in the region.
I was literally just about to head down the paddock and or down to my small feedlot and get the rest of our lambs out, about 230 30-odd lambs that were the last of last year's lambs, and they've been fed up well and looking really good. They were to be trucked at 7:30 this morning, but and I had a call from the agent not half an hour before to say, "You're right to go, Gab." "Yes, I am." And then I had the phone call to say, "Oh, actually, we've got a bit of a problem." So the lambs are still in the feedlot. I have had a phone call to say that they will go next week.
That was to the JBS operation in Melbourne?
Yes, in Brooklyn, yes.
And what did they say about the nature of the problem?
My understanding is that they had to shut down all operations. They even had to truck out a lot of lambs that were there ready for kill, so that they could be looked after until their time, the time was appropriate and they were manufacturing again.
It's a tricky business, isn't it? Because I don't think they know exactly when they might get their systems back up and running.
Well, no, I am given some confidence that we are booked in again for next week, but I guess we'll see closer to the time.
And what about your neighbours? Anybody else sending to that plant?
Well, I know from our area there were 3 B doubles going of a few collection of a few different farmers who were sending their lambs down. So that's about 1,200 odd lambs that would have been going down from this small pocket. And I guess if they had to truck out 10,000 lambs on Monday alone, their kill might be, you know, half of that. I don't know their exact kill numbers for the day, but there's a lot of people, you would suggest, from southern New South Wales and Victoria that have been affected by such a move. But not just the farmers, it's the truck drivers, it's the stock handlers, it's the reorganising. It's caused a huge disruption to the market.
And in terms of cost, does it matter for you if it's a week later?
It will cost us in terms of grain. Ours are in the feedlot, so they will eat approximately 2 kilos a day of grain. It's all been grown by ourselves, so I've got ours on a ration of barley, corn and wheat. So it'll cost us about 2 kilos a day for 7 days for each of the lambs.
So it's undermining your returns, really, isn't it?
Look, in one way it is. Potentially they'll put on another kilo or so, which might offset it, but then you risk, you might go over the 32 kilos, and then there are penalty rates if you go over that weight. So.
And what about the trucking companies? Are they saying anything at the moment?
I haven't heard anything from the trucking companies, but as you can imagine, they've lost a couple of days' business at least, and then they're potentially putting back business that would have come their way next week.
That's Gabrielle Copeland in New South Wales, near Finlay, speaking with David Claughton. Normally would be supplying the Brooklyn JBS plant, though, but has been told to hold off for a week. And that would be hard as a producer. As you just heard, you get penalties if your carcass, if your animal falls outside the weight range and the style range that the buyer's looking for. And if it's JBS that's pushed you back a week, I wonder who wears that cost. Maybe you can let us know. 0467 842 722, on the text line. Also, would love your information. If you have got a milk price today, Lee from Kudgee has a Saputo price, but I'd love a photo, Lee, of an announcement to go with that to know if it's confirmed. We might hold off on that for a minute, or maybe other Saputo suppliers can tell me if they've had a milk price yet as well, just to see if we can get a couple of different sources on this. 0467 842 722. Let's talk backpacking hostels for the moment now, though, with the National Body for Backpacker and Youth Tourism saying there's only about a quarter of the number of working holiday makers in Australia that there usually is. This has forced many backpacker hostels to close, while others are on the market. In Mildura, a backpacker hostel that's been unoccupied since November is getting a makeover, and when it reopens, it will be used to accommodate Pacific Islanders who are in the region for seasonal work. Kelly Hollingworth caught up with John George, who will manage the property on behalf of the new owners.
With backpackers, we normally would try and help them find work in the area. These guests coming under the Pacific Islander or Seasonal Worker Program will have work already organised. So our role, as we see it then, will be to ensure that they're comfortable and nothing in their living conditions gives them a cause for concern, enabling them to be happy in that. So therefore, you know, happier, I guess, in attending the work that they will do. And then, much like we would if it was our own family, we would be hoping that we were able to deal with any welfare issues that they had or refer them on to the relevant places if anything like that arose. In general, we want people to be comfortable and feel that they're part of our family, even though a slightly different family to the ones that we've had over a number of years.
When the federal budget was handed down, the indication was that international borders may reopen in about 12 months' time, so mid-next year. Do you expect that backpackers will return to Australia to do seasonal work when that happens?
I think backpackers will return to Australia, but I suspect that the visa requirements will alter, and I think that hopefully by then the government will have done something to address the chronic labour shortage across almost every sector in Australia, and that there'll be an expansion or an embedding of the Pacific Islander and the seasonal worker programs, probably for two reasons. One, because that's a source of labour, and the other one because it enables Australia's presence in the South Pacific to remain visible against some of the other Asian pressures that there are.
So if backpackers do return and they come to regional areas like Mildura, do you think there'll be places for them to stay still?
I think there'll be some, and I suspect that it may well be that with the number of backpacker hostels that have closed in the area, I suspect other people will come along and take advantage or see opportunities in providing accommodation. What we see now is an awful lot of more experienced backpackers, shall we say, not people in their first year on working holiday visas. We see the people that have been here now for 2 years, possibly going into their third year, and they're looking for accommodation in share houses and so on. They're not looking for the one-stop shop that a backpacker hostel can provide with accommodation, with transport, with work. They can source work themselves and they have their own vehicles. And they're looking for probably something a little bit more personal than possibly some backpacker hostels are able to provide.
Just a few blocks away, Mildura real estate agent Mark Thornton is selling the Oasis Backpackers. The 25-bedroom property can accommodate 100 people, and it can be all yours if you have between $1.3 and $1.5 million.
It's been on the market for 3 weeks. We've had a fair bit of local interest, a lot from Melbourne as well. And a range of different requirements from different buyers. So it'll be interesting once we get the result, you know, what the ultimate buyer will do with the property, because it's been very, you know, there's been some interest for to continue it on as a backpackers, particularly from Melbourne. There's been other interest from purely just land value to potentially develop the actual the property itself, and then some other potential interests to continue it for accommodation, but not backpacker-related.
How much has the coronavirus pandemic influenced the owner's decision to sell the property?
It's absolutely influenced them, and it's not viable for them to continue because there's no backpackers in Australia at the moment. Well, there may be a few, but very minimal compared to the norm. So, you know, I think naturally you can understand that these guys, are not just the owners here, but other hostel owners around Sunraysia are probably not enjoying the current situation with what's happened with COVID and the lack of backpackers in Australia. So naturally, I think, you know, they'd still be running it in a great way. They've owned it for a long time. They've really taken care of the property and the people that have come through as the backpackers, but it's obviously forced their hand to sell.
Are you expecting other local backpacker hostels could be sold in the future? Are you getting any inquiries from others?
Yeah, look, I have. I've had another couple indicate that they'd probably look to sell. And I think that's a pretty scary situation for Sunraysia. You know, we know how much this area relies on the backpacking industry, how vital they are to our citrus and grape industries and every other horticulture industry in the district. And, you know, it's a very scary situation if these all sell and they don't remain as backpackers. What do we do when the borders open up. You know, what happens then? What does this community do when backpackers know they want to come here, but we can't actually house them? And I think that's the big issue here, which I think probably needs to be addressed from a local point of view.
There you go. That is Mildura real estate agent Mark Thornton ending that report from Kelly Hollingworth. You're listening to The Country Hour, and we've got the letter now from Saputo. Thank you very much. It is milk price day. So today, all the final milk prices should be coming dairy farmers' way by 2 o'clock today. That's the deadline for them to get their milk prices into dairy farmers under the new mandatory dairy code. The letter from Saputo to suppliers saying the minimum prices and additional payments resulted in the weighted average farm gate price. Opening price is $6.65 per kilogram milk solid. So it's on weighted averages. That's 10 cents higher than Fonterra, that's announced their weighted average at $6.55 at the moment. Also have a message from an ACM supplier saying they've been told their opening milk price is going to be $6.85. We're waiting for confirmation on that one as well, and we'll bring that to you as soon as it happens. We're waiting also on Victorian government authorities to give their coronavirus update for today. So given that's coming at 12:30, that's going to cut into prime weather time. I thought we'd bring the weather forward early for you on The Country Hour today to make sure we get it in, because I know it's an important part of our program to many of you. Miriam Bradbury is our senior forecaster at the Weather Bureau today and can join you now. G'day, Miriam.
Good afternoon. How are you going?
I'm good. Thanks for joining us slightly early. How's it looking around Victoria today?
Yeah, well, fairly cloudy conditions across the state today, particularly in the east. We're seeing maximum temperatures really struggling to push above sort of around 12 degrees so far today. But hopefully as the afternoon progresses and we get some more patches in that cloud, we'll see another few degrees coming through there. Across the west, it's a little patchier, so a little bit warmer. Temperatures have already reached, generally speaking, between 15 and 17 degrees. These cloudy conditions are going to continue over the next couple of days. However, they're coming in ahead of an approaching trough, which is going to reach Western Victoria late tomorrow and then move across the state during Thursday. So it is going to bring some shower activity, mostly to northern parts of the state. Unfortunately, the rainfall totals we're expecting are not especially high, generally 2 to 6 millimetres or so across the Mallee, northern country and north central districts, and pushing into the northeast, with rainfall totals less than 2 millimetres or so in the south. And this is because it's one of those systems which is moving inland across New South Wales and dragging that moisture further north. We will see the showers continuing into Thursday, however, but easing off and sort of forming a more regular pattern with those showers there. So not very much, but generally 1 to 5 millimetres about more elevated parts of the state, and in the southwest, less than 1 or 2 millimetres for the remainder. However, we will see things clearing up a little bit as we get into Friday and head towards the weekend. Those showers will gradually contract away to the southeast on Friday with a new ridge of high pressure pushing in from the west, which means our skies will clear up late in the week and bring us another sort of clear, cold morning for our Saturday morning. So we are expecting our frost to return by the weekend, with large areas of the state dropping close to 0 degrees in those inland parts. Closer to the coast, we'll still be seeing positive temperatures, however. So really not much on the horizon this week, apart from this trough system, which will bring us a bit of shower activity in this cloud, and then clearing up again for the start of our weekend. Our next best bet of good rainfall is probably going to be with the system coming early next week. Moving through on Monday and Tuesday, it looks as though it will be a much stronger front. So keep an eye on that one to see how those rainfall expectations shape up. But it looks as though it will be a cold start to our second week of winter.
Yeah, so we've got cold weather, that front to watch on Thursday, but then a little bit more action coming early next week. So when you say more significant than the front coming through this week, can you give us a clue as to by how much in terms of rainfall?
Yeah, look, more significant really in terms of its temperatures that we're expecting. So we will see a slight drop. We will see a slight drop after this system later this week, but a much more significant drop with the front coming early next week. The rainfall totals, you know, we're not talking, sort of broaching records or anything like that, but certainly we're looking much healthier, double-figure rainfall totals expected across that Monday and particularly the Tuesday as the front moves across. Unfortunately, it's mostly going to be on and south of the ranges, as is usually the pattern with these stock standard fronts, but at the very least, it'll bring us a little bit more than this week's trough.
And in the realm of personalised rainfall requests that people send on the text line, Dogbite says, what's the guess for Yarrawonga over the next week? I want the crops to, in terms of rain, I suppose, I want my crops to grow so the mice leave, says Dogbite. So when we're talking about those rain fronts coming through for northern areas of the state over the next week or so, can you give us an idea of what they're expecting?
Yeah, sure. So this system, as I said, approaching on the Wednesday, generally not really too much in terms of those totals on the Wednesday across the north. 2 to 6 millimetres is the expectation there. As the system moves to the east on Thursday, though, that northeastern area will see a little bit more, generally 3 to 8 millimetres, possibly locally up to 10 millimetres or so on the Thursday. But it is still going to be pretty showery, so that means pretty patchy. So we could see quite a bit of variation across that area there. But after the Wednesday and the Thursday, then we do see things drying out again, and it's not going to really be until that front next week that our next best chance of rainfall is going to move across.
Any warnings we should be wary of for the next day or two?
No, very, very stable conditions over the next couple of days. We have zero warnings out for Victoria at the moment. The next sort of look at those warnings is likely going to be on the weekend when we return to frost warnings for central and eastern parts of the state, possibly the Wimmera and parts of the Mallee as well, but we'll have to wait and see how those temperatures shape up. But the frontal system early next week could possibly bring quite a few more warnings with it. The winds look a little bit more significant. But we will. It's still kind of a watch this space as we see this system developing.
Miriam, just as we let you go, here's some nice details for you on the text line from Chris from Bendigo. Miriam gives a very detailed weather forecast and is really well spoken. So there's your feedback for today as well.
Oh, thank you very much, Chris. I am blushing.
Thanks for the update too. We really appreciate it.
No worries.
Miriam Bradbury at the Weather Bureau giving you your update. I'm glad we got that in. Victorian health authorities will be stepping up to the microphone shortly. I can see the screen on the television showing the empty lectern with a microphone there. We will take you to that when it happens. We'll also have some more rural news and information for you later on in the program. A few texts on dairy prices. This one says, Warwick, although the opening price, I'm using the air quotes, for Saputo is $6.65. My calculation says the average price for the year is $6.15. I thought they were meant to give their minimum price and not the opening price from Confused Dairy Farmer. That is a really good point. It is the minimum price that they're meant to be providing out, and they probably do on their website if that information is published. From the information that comes across my desk, I have got weighted prices for both Saputo and Fonterra, not minimum prices. If people can help us with that information, that would be useful. And we might even follow up with Mick Keogh from the ACCC on this so you can watch this space. We might do that for you in the next day or two on the Country Hour. Bob says, Woz, you must be smarter fella than the average person to be able to simplify milk prices so easily. Milk volume multiplied by protein and milk fat volume charge, pickup charges over all farm production levels, not to mention seasonal payment rates of breed of cows. Well done on finding a cents per litre. As I keep saying, Bob, that is rough though. That is very rough, but it does give, I feel, people who are not dairy farmers an idea of where milk prices be, because a kilogram per milk solids figure means a lot to you in the dairy industry, and I understand that, but trying to provide, say, you know, $6.50 to $7 is between sort of 49 to 53 cents for a dairy farmer is at least a rough guide for people to understand what you farmers are being paid. And I realise it's not perfect, and that's why I always try and say it's a rough price when we're talking about such things. Do have more information on the ACM milk price for you. James has tweeted to me saying it works out Here we go. ACM, sorry, is a $6.85 weighted average. There's the weighted average for you again, but has provided the range from $6.55 to $7.10 for ACM. $6.55 then being your minimum, I suppose, is what we can report that on for you for a weighted average price. Might quickly head to the News Bureau and see if we can slip in some headlines. Might have to jump out of this, though, if the authorities step up. Matt Neal is in the News Bureau for us. G'day, Matt.
Good afternoon, Warwick. There are currently 35 people isolating in the Barwon Southwest region that have visited an exposure site. The Barwon Southwest region extends from Geelong to the South Australian border. Barwon Southwest Healthcare says the individuals will be monitored for their entire two-week isolation period. Federal government data shows more than 34,000 people across Gippsland have received a COVID-19 vaccine at a GP or respiratory clinic. In the past week, more than 4,500 people got a jab at one of Gippsland's six federally funded respiratory clinics or at a GP, bringing the total number of people to have received at least a single dose of a vaccine to 34,661. This doesn't include figures from Gippsland's state-funded mass vaccination hubs in Traralgon, Wonthaggi and Sale. The Pfizer vaccine will be available from tomorrow at the Gippsland and East Gippsland Aboriginal Cooperative as they begin Phase 2A of the vaccine rollout. 1,200 doses have been supplied in Bairnsdale to vaccinate Indigenous Gippslanders aged between 16 and 49.
Sorry, Matt, we've got to jump out of that. Let's head to the update from the Vic government now.
From the night before, it's cut off, and there are therefore three that I can newly announce today in addition to those six previously reported yesterday. Two of these three are primary close contacts who were quarantining during their infectious period, which is good news. One is still under investigation. They are not a known contact and are not directly linked to any exposure site, but there is very close proximity to that at exposure site, and we're confident that the investigation that's ongoing will uncover further crossover points. Our public health team are actually seeing more and more of this in this particular South Australian hotel outbreak playing out a bit differently to earlier outbreaks. There is evidence of casual acquisition instead of those in direct close contact, like friends at a pub, family members, and I'll get the COVID response commander to report in more detail about some of our specific priority concerns in this area. I can also update Victorians that the aged care case yesterday, the first one, the R-Care worker, the genomic sequencing has confirmed that that case is directly linked to the South Australian hotel outbreak quarantine, and that is at least confirming in our mind that this is all the one related cluster from the South Australian hotel breach. I'm also able to advise that all staff and residents at Blue Cross Sunshine Aged Care Facility have tested negative, other than that one case we reported on yesterday. That was the crossover worker between R Care Maidstone and Blue Cross Sunshine. There have been no further positive tests at R Care in Maidstone as well. Of course, these sites remain under strict infection and prevention control measures, and I want to particularly thank the Western Public Health Unit for leading that work, and I want to thank again the wonderful clinical staff and particularly the nurses from both Melbourne Health and Western Health who have stood into these important infection prevention and control measures and to support both those facilities as a result of their own staff having to be furloughed and quarantined. I can also advise that another Blue Cross facility which shared a worker advised that we talked about yesterday, that site has been stood down as an infection risk as the particular worker was not infectious at the period that they worked at the other Blue Cross site. That news aside, there continues to be significant concerns around ongoing transmission in particularly our northern suburbs and many large exposure sites that have been added to the exposure site list over the last 36 hours. Our public health team are currently weighing up whether there is still coronavirus circulating in these communities, and we still consider our response to the current outbreak on a day-by-day basis. With 20,484 vaccines delivered yesterday, it's been another strong day for our state-run systems, and I want to thank our hard-working vaccination staff for their efforts right across our 30-plus state vaccination centres, and just remind people that equally, in fact, more vaccines are provided to our primary care and GP network, and Victorians seeking vaccinations have two options, really, as to how to meet the increased demand that we're seeing out there for vaccinations, the GP network and our state clinics. We are pleased that the overwhelming majority of frontline healthcare workers in Victoria have already received their vaccines. Effectively, it's at practical completion rates. There is already the firm expectation that healthcare workers in our system, dealing with particularly our highest risk patients, such as those with COVID-19, are vaccinated. And I note that the Prime Minister and the Commonwealth Health Minister have sought medical expert panel to review how we can all increase this density of take-up of healthcare workers and other frontline workers' density even more, and that's a move that Victoria welcomes. And we will keep doing all we can to ensure we're making it as easy and as fast as possible for healthcare and aged care workers in the public or private sector to get vaccinated as quickly as they can. To that end, Minister Dunallan will be shortly announcing further priority access for workers and residents in some of our most vulnerable settings to get the vaccine, particularly in those areas that are responsibility of the Commonwealth. Finally, there's been another strong round of COVID testing yesterday with over 40,000 tests done. And I repeat the call out that we made yesterday that the Melbourne Showgrounds Testing Centre, which has the largest capacity in the state, still has relatively short waiting times than a number of other nearby and other locations. So I would ask that all Victorians do the right thing with even the slightest of symptoms, come forward, get tested, and keep turning out in those numbers. Hop on the website to get the information that you need as to what the waiting times in the closest test centre to you are, because this is how we monitor and track the movement of the virus across our community, respond quickly, and move as quickly as we can to shut down lines and chains of transmissions. I'll ask Minister Dunallan to talk about our initiative for testing and vaccines, rather, and then I'll get the COVID commander to explore these issues in a bit more detail, particularly about the current outbreak's latest data. So, thanks, Luke.
Thanks, Minister. Our dedicated and hard-working aged care and disability workers need easy access to the vaccine. So as today, as the Minister said, we're going to make it easier for them. We'll be undertaking a five-day vaccine blitz to ensure workers in these vulnerable settings are protected against coronavirus. This means from Wednesday the 2nd of June to Sunday the 6th of June, workers in private sector aged care facilities and the residential disability sector, which are all managed by the Commonwealth, will be given priority access to walk-in vaccination hubs around Victoria between 9 and 4pm when they present evidence of their employment. The following vaccination hubs are participating in the five-day blitz. They include the Royal Exhibition Building, the Melbourne Convention and Exhibition Centre, Sandown Racecourse, the Melbourne Showgrounds, former Ford factory in Geelong, Bendigo Community Clinic, Ballarat Macquarie Hotel and Convention Centre, Shepparton Showgrounds, the McIntosh Centre, Terrelgan Race Course and with the Wodonga Vaccination Hub. Aged care and disability workers are currently eligible to be vaccinated at the state hubs, but this is very much about trying to stimulate that demand, trying to actually get more workers to get greater coverage of the private aged care sector and also the disability sector. We have concerns that there isn't enough coverage, so that's very much why we're stepping in. That has been available, as I've indicated earlier, but this is very much a call to arms of those workers who are on the front line. It's very much come out, we'll give you a priority lane so it makes it quicker and easier, get through it in a speedier time, because we very much want to ensure we're protecting those vulnerable people in both the aged care facilities and the disability sector from COVID-19. Separately, we're also going to be setting up enhanced accessibility centres for people with disabilities in residential care. So there will be 9 of those centres. 2 of them are up and running already, one in Ballarat and one in the Royal, are going to be set up very soon. One will we intend to have in Ballarat, another one in the at the exhibition buildings, and another 7 to come. And these will very much be focused on working directly with the major service providers of residential care for people with disabilities. So it'd be a direct link, a direct contact between the department and those larger providers to bring in people with disabilities who feel comfortable to actually have their vaccine shot outside of their residential facility. We will have disability liaison officers working with them to ensure that we actually also get greater coverage in that space, because again, we have serious concerns in relation to the coverage of people with disabilities in residential settings. So very much stepping in to assist the Commonwealth in those endeavours to ensure we provide greater protection in the community. Thank you. Sorry.
Thanks, Minister, and good afternoon. Since the start of this outbreak on Monday last week, we've now seen over 317,000 tests delivered, and a rate of over 43,000 tests a day. 90% of those test results are coming back within 24 hours. My thanks to all those people who are coming forward day after day to get tested. It is such an important thing to do in order to give us as much intelligence about where this outbreak is still running as we do all we can to bring it to ground. Over the same last 7 or 8 days, we've seen 116,000 vaccinations delivered in our state-run vaccination centres. We are just shy of 500,000 vaccination doses now delivered through our state-run clinics since the start of our programme. Again, fantastic to see 20,000 people come forward to get vaccinated yesterday. We're seeing some pretty strong demand again today, and my thanks to everybody who's come out today. We also took over 21,000 calls yesterday for more vaccination bookings, and of course, that work will continue. We now have 54 active cases in this particular outbreak, and I'll go through some of those in a moment. We've also yesterday undertook over 700 home visits to people who are either positive cases or who are isolating. It is so, so important that the 4,800 primary close contacts we now have, that they continue their safe and effective isolation. Reports on the ground are really strong. We're seeing really, really good compliance with people doing exactly that. And my thanks to all those, you know, just under 5,000 people. This is a hard thing to be asked to do, to remain at home, to remain fully locked down for 14 days. It is a significant burden on people. We, of course, do all we can to support. That support work will continue. And my thanks to our colleagues, particularly in the ADF, who have come on side over the last couple of days to strengthen our home visit programme to support those who are doing that isolation. As ever, there are, of course, a small handful, literally a small handful, of people who aren't quite complying, and they are being followed through and dealt with as appropriate. There are now, of the 4,800 primary close contacts, 75%, 3/4 of those, have now returned a negative test. That, again, is an encouraging figure. We're certainly keeping up with our primary close contacts. We are more than hitting all of our national benchmarks, as you would expect here. And, of course, we're seeing, as we find out more, as we get more negative test results come in, it allows us to close our lines of inquiry and to focus in on those remaining areas of concern. As the Minister has said, we have 3 related components to this cluster. We have the city of Whittlesea, where we've already started. We have the port of Melbourne, particularly associated with a workplace. And, of course, the R-Care aged care facility in Maidstone. We have confirmed through genomic testing that all those cases, all 54 cases across those three clusters, are all connected, and they all come back to our South Australia case. And I thought I might just start with just a flashback to the Melbournian, to the Victorian, who left South Australia's hotel quarantine system on the 4th of May. We believe, and our colleagues in South Australia have confirmed this repeatedly through their own reviews, and my thanks to them for their work, that he was he became infectious. He caught the infection on the 4th as he was exiting hotel quarantine. He was on a plane on the same day back into Melbourne. He went to work on the 5th and 6th at TIC, the PACT Group, down in Port Melbourne. And then, of course, over a subsequent few days, he went into the city, he had a curry, he visited a number of grocery stores. We identified at the time over 120 primary close contacts across those exposures. And it was a good question yesterday morning around, well, what about earlier in the period? His first movements off that plane were home and to work. All those locations have been fully exhausted. Of course, he returned no positive primary close contacts throughout his exposure period. And, of course, all those individuals completed their 14-day isolation period as appropriate. But we are absolutely clear that there is a missing link between this individual and the subsequent outbreak that we've seen into Whittlesea, Port Melbourne and Mercure, confirmed genomically. And we have a number of close adjacencies that the teams continue to investigate.
We'll leave Commander there, Jerome Weinmar. You also heard from Health Minister Martin Foley speaking about the current outbreak. Still no word yet on what restrictions might mean or whether they will be lifted for regional areas or what happens with a ring of steel. If something happens further in this press conference, we'll take you back there and bring some of that information to you. If you'd like to keep watching and watch Question Time, which I know many of you would like to do, you can go onto an ABC Regional Victorian Facebook page, and they are all streaming the press conference there if you'd like to continue to watch what's going on. You're listening to The Country Hour, though. We are going to head to markets shortly on the program before we finish up for the day. It is milk price day too, which is an important day for dairy farmers all getting their prices today, knowing what they will be paid from the 1st of next month for the next year ahead. And they have been coming in, prices have been coming in throughout the show. Saputo, $6.65 weighted average milk price there. ACM, $6.85 weighted average milk price. They've also given a bit of a range as well. If you have one from a company that you've received today and you're a dairy farmer, we would love you to share. You can send us a text 0467 842 722 or you can call 1300 977 222 if you'd like to call on the phone. And speaking of the phone, I have the newly minted United Dairy Farmers of Victoria Vice President Mark Billings on the phone. Mark Billing, welcome to the Country Hour.
Good afternoon, Warwick.
First things first, we've heard from Saputo today. We've heard from ACM. We've heard previously from Fonterra, Barra and Buller, all around sort of the $6.40, $50 and upwards as far as milk prices go. Is that a good enough milk price for dairy farmers for the next year ahead?
Oh, that's pretty much a loaded question, Warwick. We'd always like a bigger milk price, but I think what we're seeing is a stable milk price. Not a huge change on the current season we're in, moving into the next season. And look, one thing that doesn't bode well for our businesses is a volatile milk price. So the more even it is from season to season, the better it is. And hopefully there'll be upside on the back end of the next season too.
And it's for your own business. Obviously, you're now the Vice President of the Dairy Lobby, but you're also a farmer that has to do your own numbers. Are you going to be paid more next year than you were this year?
Yeah, look, we'll be slightly better off, which is a good thing, obviously. I think the underlying advantage for us too has been our seasons over the last couple of years. It's pretty rare in the dairy game to get a good season and reasonable milk prices at the same time. So I think a lot of farms, dairy businesses, are looking at consolidating their positions and looking to the future, whether that's making the choice to move on out of the industry because there is choice now, or expanding. And look, I'm hearing quite a few people doing both. But I think that the clear thing here is that the seasons and the milk price are conducive to dairy farmers being able to make sound choice.
We had the five-year anniversary of Murray Goulburn on this program earlier this year, only a month or two ago, them dropping their milk price. Does more years like this one allow you to put the difficulties the industry has faced recently in the rearview mirror?
Yeah, look, I think so. The underlying issue, though, it put a real hammer through the industry when Murray Goulburn and Fonterra brought the price back. And look, there's businesses out there that will still suffer for that for some time. And not only from a financial perspective, but just the outlook on the industry. It was a fair old kick at the time. It doesn't seem like 5 years ago, I've got to say. And, you know, they say time heals, but the wounds are still pretty raw.
You've just been elected Vice President of the UDV. That was meant to happen at a conference. It didn't happen because of the latest restrictions. But what do you want to bring to the role?
Look, I think leadership is the key thing, Warwick. UDV is a broad church. There's a lot of different views out there. And we've got to, as UDV, collect all those views to formulate good policy. And look, good policy, it might sound boring, but good policy helps us as dairy farmers navigate all the issues that we face, whether it's from environmental, whether it's the broader industry, whether it's talking with processors. Whatever it is, good policy, sound policy, needs to be drawn from the broadest membership base that we can possibly get.
And just really quickly, in a word or so, is this system where you get the price a month early, or is it working? Is it working well?
Oh, look, from a planning perspective, yes. To have a milk price now that you know is pretty much going to be the minimum for the season, you plug that into your budgets and look, it's a pretty sound budget compared to what we used to have to deal with not always seeing milk price, you know, sometimes till July. When the season started, this system at the moment, from a budgeting point of view, if nothing else, is working pretty well, I think.
Well, Mark, thanks very much for joining us and thanks for staying on hold during that whole press conference. Really appreciate it.
That's fine, Warwick.
Mark Billing there, the UDV Vice President. Nearly promoted him then. UDV Vice President Mark Billing, newly minted on Friday, speaking to us here on the Country Hour. Let's head to markets. We'll sneak them in. We'll start today in Shepparton with a cattle market report. Here's Nicole Varley.
Well, we had 760 exports and 510 trade cattle, with the bulk of the exports offered being cows. The finished grown steers and bullocks were firm to a few cents dearer, with numbers being scarce. The beef cows had plenty of weight and condition and remained at similar prices to last sale. Yearling steers to the trade were scarce. There was a handful of supplementary fed cattle. However, more veal types were presented. The bulk of the vealers to processors made from 445 to 510, with the runner lightweight Angus calves making to 560. The yearling steers 420 to 480 to average 465, while the yearling heifer portion 430 to 478, averaging around 458 for the heavier end. The 400 to 500 kilo grown steers, 409 to 440. 500 to 600 kilo steers, they made from 401 to 405 to be firm to a few cents dearer. 600 kilo plus bullocks, 361 to $4. Frisian steers reached 320. The beef cows, 312 to 344. The dairy portion, heavy dairy cows, 232 to 285. This is Nicole Varley from Shepparton.
Thanks very much for that, Nicole. Let's head to Wodonga cattle. The next two market reports will be filed from remotely from our market reporters because Regional Livestock Exchange, a business that runs a lot of sale yards around Australia, are not allowing market reporters on their facilities to be able to deliver market reports under the lockdown conditions. So I thought I would give that as a disclaimer before these markets. Let's head to Wodonga for Leanne Dax's report.
Just over 600 cattle sold to the usual buying group. Despite less numbers, feedlots dominated the market, buying a fair percentage of the younger cattle. The pick of the veal were firm to 5 cents easier, 440 to 510. Trade steers jumped 20, 440 to 480. Trade heifers gained 11, 410 to 468. Feeder heifers were dearer, 380 to 468. Feeder steers lifted 30 cents, 420 to 484. Heavy grown steers and bullocks eased back 2 to 4, 355 to 425. Heavy heifers over 500 kilos, 358 to 415. I'm Leanne Dax for MLA.
And we'll go to Ballarat. Same issue as Leanne in Wodonga. Shiona Lamb is filing this report remotely.
Agents drew for 30,000 lambs. The quality was plain to excellent, and bidding was erratic at times. Demand for the very neat, short-skinned trade lambs with good fat cover were still in high demand. Light lambs to the trade to suit MK orders sold 10 to 15 cheaper, not the quality of previous weeks. Medium trade sold firm to 5 cheaper, and heavy trade were 5 to 10 cheaper on last week's levels. Most sold between 185 to 210, with sales up to $215 a head. Heavy export sold from 230 to a top of $280 a head to be 5 to 10 softer. Lambs to the paddock were back 10 to 15, with not the store buyers present. This is Shiona Lamb reporting the Ballarat market for MLA.
Thank you very much for that, Shiona. That's about all the time we have for you on the Country Hour today. There are so many great stories we haven't been able to bring you, obviously, with important information like the Victorian government's press conferences being played for you during the program. You can find a lot of those stories online. Head there now, abc.net.au/rural for all of that news and information. There's a great one there on community supporting agriculture, a business that's selling produce direct to consumers and going pretty well thanks to things like COVID lockdowns, spiking businesses. You can read all about that and much more, like cod eating mice. Yes, you heard me say that right. abc.net.au/rural for all of that information. That's it for the Country Hour today. We'll catch you at the same time tomorrow.